Good evening, everybody. Yes, it is Friday. Welcome to tonight's program. This first hour tonight is sponsored by Paula from Bayonne, New Jersey, who says TGIF. Oh, and everybody at the Democratic Underground, Malloy, True Secret Thread. But I think Paula is the one who sent in the message. Thank you, Paula. TGIF from Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey, and everybody at the DU Democratic Underground, Malloy, True Secret Thread. First hour sponsored by Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. If you want to know about sponsorships, go to MikeMalloy.com, and on the toolbar at the top, you'll see Sponsor. Click it. MSNBC suspended... Joe Scarborough for today, and I don't know how long he's going to be suspended. They cited eight $500 political campaign contributions, according to Politico. Scarborough will reportedly be unpaid during his absence. I guess this is what's good for Oberman is good for Scarborough. The whole thing is necessary, I think, to make a point that the Murdoch, the Rupert Murdoch radio and television terrorist network is different from MSNBC, CNN, well, different from everybody else. Rupert Murdoch's organization is a terrorist network that is designed solely to undermine the confidence of the people of the United States in their own government. So, in that regard, I guess MSNBC had no choice here on with Scarborough or Oberman. I think it's ridiculous to do this, except in the context of separating MSNBC from the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network. And in that regard, I think it's important. But the whole thing is... Kind of crazy that it's come to this in the first place. The candidates that Joe Scarborough donated to consisted of old friends and his own brother, running in state legislative race. Or in the case of one friend, the guy was running for the Escambia County, Florida supervisor of elections. Not exactly the kind of campaigns that are ever discussed on MSNBC anyway. But like with Oberman, there's no reason that Scarborough couldn't have sought permission for the donations first, as is company policy. The thing about company policy, and I've been there a couple of times, I worked for CNN, I worked for Cox Communications, I worked for ABC. The thing about corporate rules and regs, you know, when you work for one of those corporations, you either play by their rules or you don't. And, I mean, what are you going to say, right? I'm not defending the rules. I'm just saying what is, if you are going to work, I found that out in working for these corporations. When I worked at CNN, I was there during the first time that CNN made an attempt to cover a national election. That was in 1984. And it was pretty primitive. Oh, trust me, it was primitive. But I had been up in the mountains the week before, and against advice, I went into a lake up there that I probably shouldn't have gone into, and as a result, I wound up with Giardia, Have you ever had dysentery? I don't want to get too graphic here, but it was pretty miserable, and I had to go to the news director at CNN and say, listen, I don't think I'm going to be effective on the coverage tonight. And he said, wear a diaper, but you will be here. And that was just the rule. No, I didn't wear one, but it was pretty bad. So when you go to work for a corporation, especially a corporation that is trying and succeeding, as far as I'm concerned, I realize who owns MSNBC. I know. But they don't own Scarborough, and they don't own, and I'm not a big fan of Joe Scarborough's, and they don't own Olbermann, and they don't own Rachel Maddow. And you can make the argument, and go ahead, these people have to play by their rules. That's true, but they haven't sold their souls, much like the pig Beck and the pig Hannity and the pig O'Reilly. But they don't work for a broadcast network. They worked for Rupert Murdoch's on-air terrorist network that is solely determined. The only function the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network has is to destroy the United States by undermining confidence in the leadership of this country. So there were some reactions to Scarborough's suspension, which I think are kind of fun. New York Times' Brian Stetler at the blog site said, to some, the suspension of Mr. Scarborough will simply underscore the strangeness of a policy that seeks to protect NBC's journalistic integrity, but does not differentiate between news reporters and political commentators. Mr. Scarborough is the latter. He's a former Republican congressman who shares his opinions every morning on his three-hour program. And that's the thing where I have a problem with Scarborough or Olbermann. These are not newsmen. Whereas the people on camera at the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network that seeks to destroy this country, they present themselves as reporting news events and interpreting news events. So there is a difference. Steve Bannon at Washington Monthly said, so let me get this straight. MSNBC hired a former Republican congressman to host a show in which he freely shares his opinions and endorses the GOP line on most issues. But if he makes fairly modest contributions to Republican candidates, not in secret to the Chamber of Commerce, but fully disclosed legal donations, it warrants the suspension without pay? Oh, it just gets crazier and crazier, doesn't it? You want to know how crazy? Barack Obama has a book out. His first book for children was released. And the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization ran this headline on its website, quote, Obama praises Indian chief who killed U.S. general. End quote. Obama's children's book is titled Of Thee I Sing. It hit the bookshelves today. And by the way, all proceeds from the book will go to a scholarship fund for children of wounded or fallen U.S. military personnel. All proceeds from the book will go to a scholarship fund for children of wounded or dead, let's not use euphemisms here, U.S. military personnel, some of whom are dying as a direct result of Barack Obama's orders to continue the madness in Afghanistan and Pakistan. But be that as it may, the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization had this headline on its website, Obama praises Indian chief who killed U.S. general. Whew. Oh, my God. Obama had written that Sitting Bull was a medicine man who healed broken hearts and broken promises. He wrote, it is fine that we are different. The book also says that the Lakota chief, Sitting Bull, quote, spoke out and led his people against many policies of the United States government. He is most famous for his stunning victory in 1876 over Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer in the Battle of the Little Bighorn. So, once again, the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization gets it wrong. He wasn't a general. We'll be right back.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around. Starched white shirt, you will find bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around with.
Take another shot of courage.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 21 past the hour. Again, this hour is sponsored by Paula from Bayonne, New Jersey, who writes, TGIF from Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey, and everybody at the DU, Democratic Underground, Malloy to a secret thread. Yay, Paula. I got a couple of emails wondering about Wayne in New Jersey, who wrote in the other night and was pretty despondent about the situation he was in, and made some threats against himself. And we got quite a bit of response. One response came from a man named Ty in Arizona, and he talked with you, Kathy, or he emailed you. He called and offered Wayne a job. Wayne has been unemployed for, what, it was over a year and a half, I think, and told Kathy to put them to put Ty in touch with Wayne. Is that how it worked? Which Kathy did. And I got this email from Wayne this evening. Mike and Kathy, I talked briefly with Ty in Arizona. We will talk again next Monday. This may work out. I'm scared to death. I will keep both of you informed. Peace and affection, Wayne in New Jersey. I think what he means, this may work out, is he may have a job offer that would require him to, you know, move clear across the country. But I get the feeling that Wayne would be willing to. I don't know Wayne's situation with family, but just wanted to let you folks know who have inquired. Ty in Arizona offered Wayne a job, and they talked today, I believe, and they're going to talk again Monday. He'll keep us informed. Podcast trivia coming up a little bit later on this evening. One of the things that the networks, as far as I know, did not report. I don't know if CNN or MSNBC reported it, but ABC, CBS, and NBC, I don't believe, reported it. When George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and the murderer, well, they're all murderers, but the really bad murderer, torturer, the half-dead Dick Cheney, when they all showed up to open the Presidential Center in Dallas the other day and to dig up little shovels full of dirt for a library, I guess, I don't know. There were protesters there. And I get this from the Daily Mail in London. Protesters called for George W. Bush to be arrested for his role in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars as he opened his presidential library in Dallas. Demonstrators staked hundreds of white crosses into the ground to represent troops killed in both wars and carried banners saying torture is illegal and arrest Bush. The Daily Mail had photos of this demonstration. Bush was joined by his wife, Laura, former Secretary of State Rice, former Vice President Cheney, during the groundbreaking ceremony for the new library and Policy Institute at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. So while we Americans, as far as I know, did not see the demonstrations, the demonstrators were reported by the Daily Mail of the UK. The protesters, who also held signs, including one reading, "Library or Library," L-I-E-B-U-R-Y. Among the demonstrators, Cindy Sheehan, whose 21-year-old son Casey was killed in Iraq in 2004. Paul writes, "Dear Mike, I listened to your show podcast today of last night, as I have since I found you on Air America. I work a part-time job in a supermarket here in North Carolina, and I don't know if I'll be here long, or the store will be here long for that matter, if or when the money goes away, the unemployment money, from the poor in this little town. If the GOP ass blanks go all the way and get rid of food stamps to cut spending, it's all over, since at least 60% or more here seem to be on food stamps. I'm very lucky to be married to an RN who makes a good living, but if anything happens and her income disappears, we're screwed. Thanks for all you do, and please keep up the good work. I get an education on your show." Always, Paul. Thanks, Paul. Oh, the Republicans are going to try to do it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're going to take away as much as they can from the working and non-working class in this country and the middle class to give to the billionaires. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Representative from Central Florida, I think the 18th district, I'm not sure, 8th, 18th, who was defeated in this last election by a extreme right-wing maniac. So be it. But as you probably know, Alan Grayson is going to go on this progressive cruise with a bunch of us in February. And by the way, I hope you're going to go. We have information at MikeMalloy.com. But he writes a little blog at, I think it's Alan Grayson at AlanGraysonForCongress.com, I think. Here's what he wrote today. "Dear Mike, sometime between now and December 31st, we will vote, the members of the House, to extend the Bush tax cuts for the rich, or Obama tax cuts for the middle class. In the case of the Bush tax cuts, this money will go to the rich and mighty. According to Citizens for Tax Justice, the top 1% of taxpayers, people with more than $1.3 million a year, will receive an average of $83,347 in Republican tax breaks. Here are some possibilities of what those masters of the universe can buy with their new government welfare. They could buy a brand new Mercedes-Benz E-Class car for $83,000 every year. And each year they can give the old one to a spouse, a girlfriend, whoever. B. A Hermes Birkin handbag that costs $64,800. Although, actually, if you need to know how much it costs, then you can't afford it. Chateau Dickham wine from 1787, which will cost you $56,588. This will leave each one of the multimillionaires with around $25,000 of loose change in their pockets, enough for a nice lunch, maybe. ABCD, 20,000 jars of Grey Poupon. So when people ask, excuse me, sir, but do you have any Grey Poupon? The answer is yes. 800 luxury cigars, one for the morning, one for the evening, every single day. But how will they light them? Each one with a $100 bill. That comes out to only $73,000 a year. Thank you, Republican Party. You're letting the rich in this country enjoy two cigars a day, each lit by a $100 bill. Now I have a question for you. What do you suggest that the wealthy purchase with their welfare, courtesy of the Republican Party? What new toys for the idle rich? A Mercedes, a Hermes bag, cigars? They need your ideas because they will all have so much more of our money. So, please submit your ideas to Alan Grayson at his website, which I believe is alangraysonforcongress.org or .com. You'll figure it out. Wow. From Prairie 2, God's own check-cashing store. Now, I just got this, so this will be interesting. I'm just reading it for the first time myself. Where are the jobs? This was the reverberating chant from Republicans during the campaign, but now that they can set the agenda, the answer is nowhere. Conservative Republicans upset that the Fed is injecting cash into the economy are putting forward a bill to change the existing mandate of the Fed. Since 1977, the Federal Reserve has been required to keep down unemployment and simultaneously control price inflation. The Republicans like high unemployment, and the collapsing economy doesn't have any inflation. During Alan Greenspan's reign as Fed chairman, he put the two mandates into a blender and came up with the mandate to control wage inflation. Wage inflation. His mission as the representative of the billionaire class was to eliminate the middle class in favor of creating more working poor. Alan Greenspan was very successful. As George Bush noted, when ambushed by a middle-aged woman who stated that she had three jobs, Bush responded, "Three jobs? Well, isn't that just the American way?" And you thought George didn't pay attention in briefing sessions. In reality, there isn't much the Fed can do to create jobs with the economy in shambles, but they could make things a lot worse, especially now that the Republicans can stop the government from doing anything meaningful, and they want to make sure the Fed isn't tempted to do anything constructive either. It's hard to say what effect this latest printing of money is intended to do. They're only buying longer-term treasury bonds with the stated goal of lowering interest rates, but interest rates already range from cheap to free now. Perhaps one could glean something from who they are buying them from. The best source for treasury bonds is from the Treasury Department auction. They sell a lot of them every week. The Fed is instead buying them on the open market with the intention of paying more than the current price to lower interest. The interest rate is the inverse of the price since the interest was included in the original price of the bond. To show lower interest, the Fed has, in effect, given a gift to whomever sells them their bonds. We don't know yet who is selling their bonds. Someone cynical might assume the big Wall Street banks are the beneficiaries. How about rich people? The Bush family has much of its fortune in treasury bonds. Then there's China with $900 billion in treasury bonds. Japan has a similar amount, as do the Arab sovereign wealth funds. It's possible the Fed is simply doing its job to protect the money supply by heading off a massive dumping of U.S. debt that would put us in a Greek-like condition of soaring interest rates. You can bet what they're not trying to do is create jobs. They're trying to keep the investor class from finding out they're holding a lot of worthless paper. With the U.S. having been turned into a third-world country that produces nothing and sells its resources to maintain the lavish lifestyle of the 1% at the top, the so-called full faith and credit of the United States of America isn't worth what it used to be. In God We Trust on the Money is now a poignant reminder that should be read as, your reward will be in heaven, because they won't cash your check here. PrayNumeral2.com. Oh, by the way, where is it? Oh, yeah. Remember after the shellacking, as Mr. Obama said he received during the last election a couple of weeks ago? And remember what he said? He was going to invite the leadership, the new shifting around leadership. That would be John Boehner, the orange man. Eric Cantor, whose first allegiance is to Israel and who is bound and determined to undermine the United States. Nancy Pelosi, who has been elected House Minority Leader. And Harry Reid, who will be Senate Minority Leader. He's going to invite those four and maybe a couple more from both parties to come into the White House and have a bipartisan summit. Well, he made the offer to these Republicans and Democrats, even though so many of us on the Democratic left said, oh, please, Jesus Christ, don't you get it yet, Mr. President? Well, maybe he does now. They were supposed to show up yesterday, but only the Democrats came. The Republican leadership in the House and the Senate somehow couldn't find any time in their schedules to meet with the President of the United States. And as the New York Times says, if this is what cooperation and mutual respect is going to look like over the next 2 years, then settle in for more trench warfare and far less progress. Who's kidding whom? Did the New York Times editorial board, like President Obama, really think that these rancid son of a bitches who are determined to destroy this country, along with the help of the Rupert Murdoch terrorism organization, and people like Eric Cantor, whose first allegiance stated by him is to Israel, not the United States. And a half-wit cigarette chain-smoking orange man like John Boehner, along with Mitch McConnell, that somehow there was going to be working across the big divide. Did Mr. President really think that? Did the New York Times editorial board think that? As the board said, it's been more than 2 weeks since Obama issued a post-election invitation for congressional leaders to join him for dinner on November 18th last night to discuss, quote, how we can move the American people's agenda forward, end quote. Republicans left him hanging, refusing to come to a date, even as the office of Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, said he was encouraged that the president wanted to discuss areas of agreement. Oh, yeah, we think that's great. More on this when we come back. I would just suggest, Mr. President, one of the classic signs of severe mental illness is doing the same thing over and over, and each time expecting a different result. You're aware of that, right?
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So, again, referencing New York Times editorial about, with all disrespect, Mr. President, that was the title of it. You know, I saw it this morning, and I just thought, yeah, how much longer? I just wonder, can Obama hear them yet? I mean, how much longer is he going to... He invites them to dinner. And these son of a bitch and rat bastards, they tell the President of the United States, sorry, we're too busy. Yesterday, or on Wednesday, actually, the Republicans, after getting the invitation, the Republicans led by Mitch McConnell said they didn't have the time. They had discovered there was so much to do, new members to welcome, and lots of other unspecified details. Besides, they said the president should have asked for a mutually agreeable date instead of just inviting them. Did you get that? Okay. So the meeting was pushed back until maybe, perhaps, we'll see. We'll let you know, Mr. President, November 30th. As Republicans know, that means less time to work out important compromises in the remaining lame duck session on crucial issues like taxes, the nuclear arms treaty with Russia, extending unemployment insurance. These Republicans are crazy like foxes, aren't they? The Times goes on, so far, in fact, there has been zero interest in actual compromise on any of these issues, despite extended hands from the White House. On Thursday, House Republicans blocked a bill that would extend long-term unemployment insurance past the holidays. Mr. President, don't you get it yet? You need to have listened to Mike's suggestion. That would be mine. I sometimes talk about myself in the third person, just like presidents of the United States do. You need to have listened to Mike's program a couple of weeks ago, immediately after the election, and, you know, get out of your suit, get out of your tie, get out of your white shirt, and scruff it up a little bit, you know, stop shaving every day and having your hair all nice and trimmed and everything. And put on a pair of hard-toed boots and some ragged blue jeans and a sweatshirt and strap a gun on your waist and maybe those, what are they, bandoleros across your chest, you know, the bullet belts. And... come out smoking and say, yeah, just put a cigarette in your mouth. You know, we know you still smoke, and you're probably going to smoke until, I don't know, maybe another 10 or 15 years until you finally get over it. You're damn sure not going to quit now. Not with these cockroaches jumping all over the place. But come out, cigarette, gun, bandoleros, blue jeans, scruffed up face, and say, all right, you MFers, I'll tell you what it's going to be. I'm going to be here one term. No more dinner invitations. No more reaching across the aisle. You pig bastards can kiss my black butt. Oh, and then could you hear Glenn Beck? Oh, the president's a racist! Oh! And the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization would flood the airwaves with, you know. But do it, Mr. President, just one time. You've got your place in history. You've got it. So why do you continue to offer the cockroaches a place at your table? Why? Mr. Obama, here in Georgia, you know what we do to cockroaches? We don't invite them to the table. We step on the sons of bitches. We spray them. We poison them. In other words, Mr. President, we kill them. What's next, Mr. Obama? Are you going to offer the Republican leadership after they continue to smash your face? And the reason they're doing it, Mr. President, is not because you're a Democrat. It's because you are an African-American to them. Look what they're doing to Michael Steele. Look what they did to Charles Rangel. Do you not get it yet? Where did you grow up? Was your life so insulated? Did you really believe that we lived in a post-racial society? Mr. President, please cut the crap. They tried to kill you literally. They're trying to kill you politically. They're trying to murder the United States of America. You have a broadcast terrorist organization working against you 24/7. You are not going to get anything. Why do you not understand that? Beyond the practical implications of this rudeness, the Times says, there is an increasingly obvious lack of respect for the president and the presidency, with Republicans interpreting their electoral victory as a mandate to act with hubris. Steny Hoyle, the outgoing House Majority Leader, noted yesterday that he couldn't remember a single instance when Democrats did not change their schedule to accommodate a request to meet with President George W. Bush. Mr. McConnell has already made it clear that defeating Mr. Obama is more important than negotiating on legislation. Mr. President, would you consider coming with me and a few other progressives on a cruise on February 7th, 6th, 5th, somewhere around in there, the 5th? And we will explain to you, almost all of us who are going to be talking on this cruise are white folk. We're white. We're Caucasian. And we want to tell you what you're up against. No? Too busy? I understand. This hour was brought to you by Paula from Bayonne, New Jersey, and everybody at the Democratic Underground Molloy Truth Seeker Thread. Thank you! We'll be right back.
Other people.
It is 7 past the hour, and this hour is sponsored by James Higgins. And the message he sends, thanks for keeping us sane. Well, James, thanks for sponsoring an hour. James Higgins is sponsoring this hour of the Mike Molloy program. If you want to find out about the sponsorships, go to MikeMolloy.com, and you'll see it up on the toolbar where it says sponsor. The snubbing of the President of the United States is just incredible. And I wish, I truly do wish that Barack Obama would understand why this is going on. The Rupert Murdoch broadcast terrorist organization and the cockroaches that work there that are determined to destroy the country by undermining faith in our government among the American people. And they're doing a damn good job of it. When you have a propaganda machine, to the extent that the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization has a propaganda machine, there's no limit on what you can do. No limit. The Nazis figured this out. in Germany in the 20s and 30s. I hate to keep going back to that organization, but they are the ones whose playbook the Republicans have been using now, and now the fascists in this country, for the past 30 years. It's a long process if you're not going to have overt brown shirts and SS running around the streets, gathering up different groups of people and sending them to concentration camps. That never would have worked in this country because, that kind of overt action on the part of the neo-fascist right would have resulted in a responsive or a corresponding reaction, and it would have gotten bloody. So it may still, but what the neo-fascist right in this country has decided to do is to undermine faith in not just the government, but our electoral process. It's one thing to be of a different political persuasion than people holding office. That's how the stinking two-party system in this country works. We should, as I've said before, have a parliamentary system, but that's a different argument. But it's one thing to be of a different political persuasion than your opponent in office. It's something else again to do what the Republicans have done, going all the way back to the Willie Horton ads, preceding those, because that ad, if I remember right, that ad was first run by, or an ad similar to that was first run by Al Gore in some campaign. What was it, Al Gore? I'm not sure who it was, but it was, that whole idea of destroying the political system was picked up by the right wing, and they knew that if they could make people so pissed off and sick with the negative advertising, a lot of people would stay home. A lot of normal people would stay home, and into that gap would come the neo-fascist right. When you put all that together, and then you have the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization, That is, by definition, a terrorist organization. They are destroying the United States by undermining the people's faith in their own government, their own system. When you have that in place, it's only a matter of time until the whole system collapses, or the people against whom this is being perpetrated say no and rise up in a way that lets the neo-fascists understand that the game is over. The other night, I said 18 votes would have, on the part of the Democrats, 11 Democrats who voted no and 7 who didn't bother to show up. Of the 11 who voted no for extending unemployment benefits, 8 of them have been defeated. They wouldn't even be here next session. But Jack in Salem, Oregon writes, Mike, it would not have been necessary for 18 members of Congress to have switched their votes for unemployment benefits to have been saved. As an old political vote counter, I can tell you that it's only necessary to switch a number of votes equal to one more than half the margin. In this case, with a margin of 17 votes and half being 8.5, only 9 members would have had to switch. Removing 9 votes from the no side would have reduced that vote from 275 to 266. Adding those 9 votes to the I side would have increased that vote from 258 to 267, thus reversing the outcome of the vote. Makes much more interesting the fact that 8 of the 9 are leaving Congress at the end of the session, doesn't it? I wonder what kind of pressure the Democratic leadership had to put on that one ongoing representative to get him to vote in support of the National Chamber of Commerce. Now, on a companion matter, does anyone in his right mind believe that millions of dispossessed and destitute Americans are simply going to sit down on the curbstone and quietly starve to death? Well, Americans are the most docile, sheep-like people on earth, but no, I don't believe that's going to happen, especially if they have children. Desperate people will do whatever they have to do in order to acquire food, to get out from under the rain and find some warmth. Whatever they have to, quote, quote, will definitely include violence, as that's going to be the only route open to a huge number of people. What will be most interesting will be to see what group of persons turns out to be the targets of all that violence. Will it be the millionaire members of Congress who stab the people in the back? Will it be the billionaire banksters on Wall Street who stole our entire economy and stuck it in their own pockets? Whoever it turns out to be, let's hope it won't be random violence directed against anyone unfortunate to come wandering by. After all, we're all in the same boat now. The leaks are getting worse every day and threatening to sink us all. Jack in Salem, Oregon. That was interesting. Nine vote switching would have done it. That's right. Thanks, Jack. This was a letter to the editor in the New York Times this morning from Niels Abo in New York City. And it was regarding Maureen Dowd's column of a couple of days ago. And Niels writes, according to Dick Cheney, quote, history is beginning to come around, end quote, in its assessment of the Bush-Cheney administration. Clearly, Mr. Cheney is confusing pronouncements broadcast on, my interpretation here, the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization, he says Fox News, and elsewhere with the work of serious historians. They're confusing what goes out by the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization and real historians. Niels goes on, of course, if Mr. Cheney had his way, historians would have precious little source material with which to work. As the Times reported in 2009, Cheney is linked to concealment of CIA project. Front page, July 12th. As the Times reported, the former vice president, quote, was the Bush administration's most vehement defender of the secrecy of government activities, end quote. Whether it was not keeping Congress informed on important intelligence matters, not divulging the identities of advisors to his energy task force, or not disclosing how the vice president's office used its power to classify secret information, Mr. Cheney and his lawyers consistently used every means at their disposal to keep others in the dark. Presumably, this applies to historians as well. So for him to speak of history's judgment on the Bush presidency a mere 2 years after leaving office, or any time for that matter, is unseemly. Niels Abo, New York, November 17th. History is beginning to come around. Let me tell you something, Dick. It's not going to come around before you no longer can hold on to the gushing sound in your chest. I wish you would have the dignity to apologize for what you've done and then lie down and wait until your God snatches your ass. You know what I'm saying? We'll be right back. Huh? You remind me.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Coming up after the break, the bottom of the hour, we're going to do podcast trivia. Kathy will open the lines during that break. Not right now, but she'll open them during the break at the bottom of the hour. And you can win a one-year subscription to podcast downloads, commercial free, of this program. This hour is sponsored by James Higgins. James Higgins. James. Who sends a message, thanks for keeping us sane. Thanks for supporting this the show, James. If you want to sponsor an hour on the program, go to MikeMalloy.com and under sponsor you'll see it. I used to be amused by the gross ignorance of right-wingers regarding what liberals have done in this country. And I think it's time to draw on Clint Gold again. Clint Gold was the former mayor of Moore, Oklahoma, and retired savings and loan executive. And he wrote this about 11 years ago, and it's pertinent. He was at a party where he and his wife were about the only liberal Democrats there. And all the people at the party were talking about, oh, you know, they're going to kick the liberals' ass. This is right at the end of the Republic or the Clinton administration. Well, it might as well have been a Republic. And Clint Gold writes, finally, a lone liberal voice asked, quote, will you people name me one bill your party ever passed to help the working man of this country? End quote. The question created much din and clamor, and someone sputtered, well, what have the Democrats done? The liberal responded with a few programs and was interrupted by howling and disdain. No different now. He noted that he had not promised they would like the programs, and he asked to complete a statement, a difficult task to ask of Republicans. So the liberals said, okay, Social Security, that's ours, Medicare and Medicaid, that's ours, the Peace Corps, unemployment insurance, welfare for the poor and for the corporations, civil rights, that's ours, student grants and student loan programs, that's ours, safety laws like OSHA, environmental laws, prevailing wage laws, right to collective bargaining, which in turn brought about paid medical insurance, paid vacations, pensions, and so forth, workers' compensation, the Marshall Plan, flood disaster insurance, school lunch programs, women's rights. But let me go on. He spoke of the Fair Labor Standards Act, which established a minimum wage, instituted child labor laws, and set up time and a half pay for over a 40-hour week. This is what liberals have done, you dumbass Republicans, you phony, hypocritical right-wingers who listen to this program. Huh? He mentioned FHA and housing and urban development with its public housing, urban renewal, 44 million residential homes. Before World War II, almost 70% of our nation were renters. By the 1970s, 70% of this nation were home buyers. Farm conservation subsidies, U.S. Department of Agriculture programs, Farmers Home Administration, because the bankers didn't want to make rural loans. Small flood control lakes, more than 3,000 in Oklahoma alone, rural water districts, rural electricity. The GI Bill was passed, which Republicans at the time bitterly opposed. They were getting all excited over millions of men returning veterans to hire as cheap labor. More than 8 million using the GI Bill have used these benefits, creating millions of entrepreneurs. Most of us had never dreamed of college. For the unemployed GI, there was 20 bucks a week for 52 weeks to help get started. It was a lot of money in those days. The Veterans Administration provided more than 2 million home loans. These are all liberal programs, you dumb bastard right-wingers. For the bankers, it was pointed out that the liberals saved their industry with the creation of FDIC and FSLIC, insuring their deposits. We saved Wall Street with the establishment of the Securities and Exchange Commission. It goes on and on and on. And what have Republicans ever done for the working class or the middle class of this country? I can give you a one-word answer. Not a goddamn thing. Nothing. But we've got a Republican House of Representatives. Woohoo! And they won't even accept an invitation to lunch or dinner to meet with the President of the United States. Well, it's going to be a fun 2 years, isn't it? Huh? All right, we have a break coming here. When we come back, podcast trivia. Tonight's question is so damn easy, I don't know why Kathy came up with this. Oh, my goodness. And once again, this hour is sponsored by James Higgins. The second hour here of the Mike Malloy Show on Friday night. James Higgins, who sends a message, thanks for keeping us sane. Thanks, James. We'll be back after the break. Do stick around. Podcast trivia. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. music. And the music also is sponsored by James Higgins, who is sponsoring this hour. Thanks for keeping us sane, he writes. That is podcast trivia music. Isn't that wonderful? Doesn't that make you... that remind you of what? 60s television programs of some sort. I don't know. Podcast trivia. If you get the right answer, you get a free one-year subscription to Molloy Podcast Downloads, commercial-free. Not that there's anything wrong with commercials. All right, cut the music. Zoop. There you go. Okay, let me see here. This is real close as to who's first. Well, it looks like it's Mark. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hey.
You're in Seymour, Tennessee?
Yes, Mike.
And listen,
Seymour, Tennessee.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I just want to call in and tell you I really love listening to your show. I just became a subscriber and just found you on the dial. And, man, I really, really like the show.
All right. Let's see if you can win a free one-year subscription download podcast, commercial-free, yada, yada, yada. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Music maestro. All right. Here you go, Mark. Sarah Barracuda, the Mama Grizzly, recently made what startling claim? A, that she could answer a question about her political platform without consulting notes written on her hand. B, that she could name three significant Supreme Court decisions. C, that she could maintain a publicly elected position without quitting for more than 3 years. Or D, that she could defeat Barack Obama to become president in 2012. Which was it, Mark?
It was D.
D. You're absolutely right. All right. Way to go, Mark, in Seymour, Tennessee, listening on XM. Stay on the line. Kathy will get the pertinent information. You have won a free one-year subscription podcast download of this program. What is it, Kathy? Every day they get it in their email? Is that how it works? Oh, they go to a website and get it. Okay, but you'll be notified of the website. Stay on the phone, Mark, and Kathy will get the pertinent information. And congratulations, pal. What else we got here? We got so much stuff. I'm so behind. I don't know. There's something. I'll tell you. I got this on the 15th. And I've been wanting to share it with you, and I just think I'm going to. Okay, this is an email I got from Kelly. And it's just, I don't know, it reads almost like a short story. All right, listen up, all right? Okay, hey, Mike. I'm going to one of those victory celebrations up here in northern Colorado in honor of that little patch of blue we managed to maintain in this part of the country. I've never been to one of these events before, and I don't know if I'll ever go again, but something inside me told me to do this, to go, to talk and to find out where in the hell people stand on things like credit card interests, car loan interests, and what our expectations are for middle class in America. Things have gotten really tough for us lately, and all this talk about giving millionaires help is really getting me going. What the hell was that $600 billion handout for? My husband and I are really struggling. We've got four kids. We moved here to Colorado so that he could work on a work at a busier location at work, hoping that that would make a difference in his ever-decreasing commission check. He's down $25,000 from last year right now. Commissioned sales, even with a decent base, are hard to make ends meet these days. Things really would be getting better for us right now, at least a little bit, if it weren't for a car accident we got into on our way out of Oregon. A girl rear-ended us. We think she was texting, never slowed down, caused the two of us to receive herniated discs. Mine are in my lumbar, his in his neck. It's excruciating. So we opted for spinal decompression as opposed to surgery or lifelong toxic pain medications. The thing is, we're having to go down to Denver for treatment. That's 60 miles or so from our house. What that means is my husband has had to miss a lot of work, and in sales that means not hitting the top tier of the commission structure. For us, that also means about $1,200 a month lost. On top of that, we're paying for gas, food while we're out in a hotel. Very hard to do as a vegetarian non-fast food eater. We had to do it on the weekends because we don't know anyone to watch all four kids and couldn't really afford help if we did. So we take them with us. We bid on a room for $40 at Priceline, and the kids look after one another while we're in treatment. It's a good choice in terms of wellness and long-term pain, but man, it is killing us. We even had to move ourselves. No help from the insurance company with that or housework. They say, hire someone and we'll reimburse you, you know, because of the accident. Give me a break. Who can afford that? So it is all out of pocket. The gas, food, hotel, lost work, wages. They will talk to us about reimbursement after we decide to settle. On top of that, we're being abused by Wells Fargo, who charges us 19.9% interest on our minivan. We've had it for 2 years and have paid $2,000 on the principal and $6,000 on interest. I don't even know how much we have paid in late fees, but I know that it's around $60 a month. We have been one note behind for a year. We make a payment every month, but have never had the money to get ahead. That would mean shelling out $1,000 all at once, and we just can't make that and feed the kids and keep them in clothes and in a decent place to live. We've also got a $13,000 debt to Home Depot or Citibank. They charge us 29.9% interest. That was left over from building our home 3 years ago when the bank who financed our construction loan backed out of financing at 100% the cost of building after we were already too far in to turn back. We lucked out and actually got a home loan modification on that one. We had to finish the house or it would have ruined us. So it went on the card. And now they want $800 per month or $380 to stay quiet and not report negatively on our credit. They won't let us pay down the principal, but they'll sure take our money or ruin our ability to do anything else. Here's an example. Last year at tax time, when our promotional interest rate was about to expire, we gave them $3,000 to pay the principal down before the interest accrued. What we didn't know, one of those sheets in our bill talking about account changes that we used to never read, explained to us that unless you paid off your entire promotional balance, that interest would be compounded based on the entire amount. So we paid them $3,000 and they charged us $3,000. We would have been just the same letting the $3,000 blow in the wind. Don't they realize that we need to eat, buy the kids winter coats, that kind of thing? I could have done a lot with $3,000. I was trying to be responsible, pay down my debt, make a good choice for my family. It didn't work. So here is my thing. We didn't get into this position really through any fault of our own. Our financial behavior has been reasonable, but our pay has gone down dramatically and our wages have been cut. And we were in a wreck. Did I mention that my husband works for one of the largest telecommunications companies in the world? I think they made $40 billion last year or something. I don't know. I can't pay attention anymore. It just makes me sick. Every time we think life is getting better, they hire more people and cut the pie smaller or change the commission structure to keep us from making as much money. I'll give you a hint. He would be happy to help you set up on an Apple iPhone or iPad for your personal or business use. So here we are working for a multi-billion dollar company, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to put food on the table for the next 2 weeks, 3 days after payday. Meanwhile, we were starting to get invited to all these social gatherings with the higher ups, presumably to check him out, see if he's worthy of a promotion. And I am a good shopper who can't even afford to go there to shop for the occasion. My question is this: if the government can give out $600 billion for whatever reason, why can't they give us a tax write-off for credit card interest? Didn't they used to do that? I mean, I know the banks are not going to lower interest rates. I'm not asking for debt forgiveness either. We didn't buy school pictures this year for the first time in our kids' lives, and I think we may be doing better than a lot of people out there. What do they want from us, Mike? Kelly. I left off a paragraph or two because it's astonishing to me. And Kelly's situation here, other than the fact that she's paying high interest rates on a couple of things, her situation is, and her husband's and her kids, are not that much different. For from what so many people in this country are going through. And yet, it's obvious from reading this that Kelly and her husband and her kids, they're continuing. They're continuing to do the best they can. And it's just, you know, I get a bunch of these, usually not this long, not this involved, but I don't know. I think about all the decent families out there who are trying to do the right thing, and how the Republicans now, that they are in the ascendancy, the neo-fascists, they're going to take care of Kelly. Oh, are they going to take care of Kelly?
Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. And again, let me mention this hour is brought to you by James Higgins. By James himself. James Higgins, who sends a message with his sponsorship, thanks for keeping us sane. That's a nice sentiment, James. Thank you for sponsoring the program. And if you want some information about that, go to MikeMalloy.com. Click on the sponsor icon or tab. And it's all there. I come across stuff all the time that is so intriguing. Robert Reich, who was Secretary of Labor during Clinton's administration, he is trying to promote the idea that you extend jobless benefits, you don't give tax cuts. Now, everybody knows that anyone with any sense knows that's what you should do if you want to rescue the economy. He writes, America's long-term unemployed, an estimated 4 million or more. Now, these are the long-term, not the official rate of 9, 10, 12 million, but 4 million or more who are long-term unemployed. They constitute the single newest and biggest social problem facing America. Their benefits, as you know, are about to run out. Congress has voted no. We're not going to, or the House voted no. We're not going to do it. We're not going to extend them. The long-term unemployed can't get work because there are still five people needing work for every job opening. That's how bad it is in this country. And the long-term jobless are often at the end of the job line. Either they don't have the right skills or enough education or have been out of work so long prospective employers are nervous about hiring them. They're also a big problem for the economy. Without enough money in their pockets, they and their families can't pay their mortgages, which keeps fueling the mortgage crisis. Nor can they replace worn-out cars and clothing or buy much of anything else, which is a drag on the economy. You heard what I just shared with you, the email from Kelly. Republicans and many Blue Dog Democrats say we can't afford another unemployment extension. These are many of the same people who say we should extend the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy for at least another 2 years. Extending the Bush tax cuts to the top 1% would cost an estimated $120 billion over the next 2 years. That's more than another unemployment benefit extension would cost. The unemployed need the money. The rich don't. Bingo! Moreover, the top 1% spends a very small fraction of their income. That's what it means to be rich. You already have most of what you want, so extending the Bush tax cut to them won't stimulate the economy. Yet people without jobs and their families are likely to spend every penny of unemployment benefits that they receive that will go back into the economy and save or create jobs. Labor Department report shows that for every $1 spent on unemployment insurance, $2 are spent in the economy. If you don't believe the Labor Department, maybe you'll believe Goldman Sachs analyst Alec Phillips, who estimates that if unemployment benefits are allowed to expire, the American economy is going to slow by 0.5%. That's going in the wrong direction, isn't it, Truth Seeker, huh? Republicans are still spouting nutty social Darwinism. Cutting taxes on the rich is better than helping the unemployed, they say, because the rich will create jobs with their extra money, while giving money to the unemployed reduces their desire to look for work. This is the kind of stuff that gives rise to bloody revolutions, Truth Seekers. Trust me. Robert Reich says, rubbish! The Bush tax cuts on the top never trickled down. Between 2002 and 2007, the median wage dropped, adjusted for inflation, and job growth was pathetic. During the Bush years, it was almost non-existent. Jobless benefits don't deter the unemployed from finding work. In most states, unemployment benefits are a fraction of former wages. And as long as unemployment remains sky high, there are no jobs to be had anyway. So why reward the people at the top with an extension of the Bush tax cut that will blow a hole in the budget deficit? And why fail to extend jobless benefits to hardworking Americans who got the boot? Quick action is needed, Reich says. Jobless benefits begin to lapse in just 2 weeks. 2 million unemployed workers will be affected. If Congress fails to act, another 1.2 million will stop receiving benefits by the end of December. Most of the rest of those who now receive federal emergency extended benefits will gradually lose them. Don't extend the Bush tax cuts to the wealthy. Give unemployment benefits to people who need them. So says Robert Reich. It's really madness, isn't it, huh? You know, I listen to these Republicans. Every time they find a microphone now, they step up and stick their ass in everybody's face and talk about how they're going to cut the deficit and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. And the way they're going to cut the deficit is take away from people who desperately need help and give to the wealthy. And seems to me I just hear a clock ticking off in the distance. I realize I'm just imagining it, but a clock ticking down to zero. And zero is the point where the American people say, we've had enough. We've truly had enough. And then the rebellion begins. And what I'm afraid of is that, like the French Revolution, once the rebellion does begin in this country, it's going to be very difficult to put that genie back in the bottle. And that may be a very good thing. It just may be. All right, when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls from you, see what you got on your mind. So give us a call, 877-996-2556, the Molloy Program. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'd like to hear from you. Give me a call. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. And this hour is sponsored by, excuse me, Ray Merritt. Ray Merritt, who says, thanks for bringing some truth and humor to the conversations we're privy to on our evolutionary quest. All right, Ray, I got you. Ray Merritt sponsoring this hour. Thanks, Ray. We appreciate it very much. If you want to find out about the sponsoring business that you hear us talk about here the past few days, go to MikeMalloy.com and click the sponsor tab. Ray Merritt, sponsoring this hour. One more thing here, I think, and then two more things, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. I read today that the pain-killing drugs Darvon and Darvocet, you familiar with those? Probably. And their generic ingredient, propoxyphene, are being removed from the market because of serious heart risks. That's according to the Food and Drug Administration. They announced it today. The agency recommended that doctors and pharmacists immediately stop prescribing the drug and contact patients to advise them to throw it away. Huh? Darvon? How many times have you taken Darvon, Truth Seeker? How about Darvocet, huh? Dr. Sidney Wolf, director of Public Citizens Health Research Group, that's a NADER organization, or it used to be, has been petitioning the Food and Drug Administration to ban this drug since 1978. 78. That's when he first petitioned, again in 2006. Dr. Sidney Wolf said the delay has cost more than 1,000 Americans their lives. Dr. Wolf, in a statement, asked for a congressional investigation into the delay. Dr. Wolf, you and I both know that's not going to happen because the neo-fascists have taken over. And Eli Lilly, that manufactures this poison, owns the Republican members of Congress. Since 2005, about 120 million prescriptions have been filled in the United States for the drug, Dr. Wolf said. Propoxyphene drugs are among the 40 most commonly prescribed in the United States, with more than 23 million prescriptions written in 2007. They've been sold since 1957. They're popular with older Americans. Their usage has waned due to newer drugs for moderate pain. Great Britain had banned this drug in 2005. The European Union followed in 2009, based partly on evidence from Florida, where medical examiners were reporting excess deaths from people who used it. But that didn't stop the company from taking it off the market in the United States? No, hell no. Why should they do that? The people who die just won't use it again, and other people may not die. Now, Eli Lilly, of course, is the company a year ago pleaded guilty to a charge that it illegally marketed the antipsychotic drug Zyprexa for an unapproved use and will pay $1.42 billion to settle civil suits and end the criminal investigation. See, by paying this, they end the criminal investigation. So once again, corporate America, with all the money in the world, they don't have to worry about this kind of stuff. Fines? Get it out of petty cash. $1.42 billion. Take it. And that stops the investigation. The criminal investigation. Well, you can't lock up a corporation, right? So anyway, if you're taking Darvon or Darvocet and you haven't heard about this, you might want to stop now. It's a painkiller. It's not prescribed for anything other than pain. And it will kill you. AJ, the Music Factory, writes in, Mike, I'm just watching a clip of The Daily Show which in turn showed a clip of Sarah Palin's Alaska. That's the new video on what? What is it, Kathy? On TLC? AJ writes, I was shaking my head, unable to believe that we've arrived at a point where this zero could be handled such prominence on the national stage when it hit me. What the F are we so upset about? For a decade now, we've all been saying that the country's going into the sewer. So guess what? We've arrived. Of course, we have no news. Of course, Fox is the number one cable station. Of course, the Red Scourge will take control of the House in January. Of course, intellectual curiosity is scorned and ridiculed. Of course, of course, of course, to all of it. My God, Mike, why are we crying? The car has been pointed in this direction for 10 years, and we're upset or surprised that we've arrived at the destination? What fools we are, truly. We witnessed the inception of every single bubble in the effing cesspool that we are now smelling. So? Look, I know that we, or at least I, won't stop ranting and feeling like I'm going insane, but it was nice to have the brief moment of almost zen-like clarity, like a temporary part in the clouds during an airline flight. We've arrived. Up here in the Catskills, we live in a snow belt. The thing we never want to hear during a weather report is the term lake effect snow. When we hear that, we know that we're about to get slammed. Then we cower and grumble and, like Sonya the Duck, go into a panic, running around in preparation for what we know we cannot avoid. Once the stuff is on the ground, however, once we're buried, there's not much to be said. Liberated from the fear of what is to come, because now it's arrived, we grab our shovels, plows, and snow blowers and go about the business of getting mobile again. Does any of this make sense? Or do I sound like I've already lost it? During the next 2 years, if you could remind me a couple of thousand times that I wrote this, I'd appreciate it. Better dead than red. AJ, the Music Factory. We have a break coming here very quickly. I don't know. I get lost sometimes. AJ wants me to remind him several thousand times over the next 2 years about what he wrote. I don't know if I can. I remember when Ronald Reagan was first elected, and it became obvious what the plans were. And some of us figured it out at the very beginning. The plan was, first plan, was to break the back of unions. Unions have been the only countervailing force against predatory capitalism. I know, that's redundant. But unions have been the only force that have held capitalism in check to a slight degree to make sure that people are paid for what they do. There were no unions back during slavery days, you see. Or perhaps the slaves would have organized or done something. But Ronald Reagan's first directive, his prime directive, the thing they put in his head, destroy the unions. And that's what he did. He began the process. So without the unions as a countervailing force against predatory capitalism, what's the next option on the list? We'll be right back with your phone call. Stay with us.
The pressures are incredible and no one seems to care. We moved our plants to Haiti and now we have to move from there. They're clamoring for more than a dollar a day from Malaysia to Mexico. At that rate, pretty soon there'll be no place for us to go. Bosses of the world, unite. Don't just sit there, fight, fight, fight. Don't be trampled by the masses, they think they can kick our ass.
Yes, I can't do now.
liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Ray Merritt. Ray Merritt. Thank you, Ray. Ray writes, thanks for bringing more truth and humor to the conversations we are privy to on our evolutionary quest. That's usually a search, isn't it? I don't know. I don't know if I'm on the evolutionary quest, Ray, but I get the point. Thanks for sponsoring the program. Blue is calling from
Lady Musgrave Island.
From New Zealand.
No, it's an island off the coast of Queensland. It's a beautiful sort of a national park island, actually, off the coast of Queensland, Lady Musgrave.
Oh, Queensland, Australia.
And we come out here pretty often when we want to escape from things.
Yes, indeed. How are you doing, Blue?
Well, I was telling Kath, we just came back from the States. I think I called you from,
yes.
From Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And we were astonished at the lack of outrage in the country about everything that's going on, as a matter of fact. I told you that there seemed to be a great deal of indifference to the election, for example. This whole fraudulent security thing with the your transportation safety, whatever they call it.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we've got underwear bombers that are escorted on planes by American CIA people without passports, with explosives that they can't possibly set off. And all of this originated with 9/11, which, of course, everyone who's rational knows was a fraud to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we got into a discussion with our friends in Portland about the failure of the Obama people to do anything about Bush and Cheney. And I pointed out, I said, look, if you're outraged about Bush and Cheney, you should be outraged about Obama as well, because he's simply doing all the same things. He hasn't changed a bloody thing, and he's expanded the wars and the spying and the rest of it. And they were a bit taken aback by that. And I was a bit nonplussed myself to discover that even these so-called progressive people, and they're very nice people, I like them, they're friends of mine, but they really couldn't make the connection. They couldn't understand that Obama's simply doing exactly the same thing that Bush is doing. In fact, he's expanded the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and moved them into Pakistan and Yemen and places like that, spending more on the military. And so it was a bit of a shock to realize that the same people that are talking about Obama failing to go after Bush and Cheney don't recognize that he's simply doing the same thing himself and that he should be facing charges in front of the World Court in The Hague.
What do you think Blue, is causing Obama, and I don't disagree with the really criminal activity, I don't disagree with what you're saying, that the really criminal activity put in place by Bush and Cheney and their cohorts, that activity is being continued by Obama. A, B, he's given them a pass, just like Bill Clinton gave George Herbert Walker Bush a pass.
Yeah.
So why do you think Obama is not trying?
Well, without sounding like a member of the Comintern or something like that, I mean, the man is simply another tool of the right wing. I mean, if you look back at what this guy did in the Senate, and he came out of nowhere, you know, sort of a hand-picked, groomed stooge, if you will. He's simply another tool, and he's a bit brighter, a bit taller, and a couple of shades darker. But the fact of the matter is he's simply another implement that they're using to further their agenda.
And yet the neo-fascists in this country, the real right-wingers, insist on calling him a socialist and insist on saying that he is trying to destroy the country with his socialism and his
Well, you're right about I've heard you talk about this before. You're right about that when you say the really rabid right-wingers in your country hate the man because he's black. And, you know, that's fairly simple. I mean, there's rabid racism. We saw that on our last visit. It was appalling, really, some of the things we saw and heard about during the couple of weeks we were there. So that's hardly surprising to me. But that doesn't change the central fact that Obama is simply another stooge of the right wing. And I'm appalled that the so-called progressives in your country still don't seem to get that. They keep sitting around wringing their hands, waiting for the guy to wake up and do the right thing. He's never going to do it.
Right. Well, I would think, Blue, that there is a number of us in this country now. Unless I'm just hearing echoes inside my own head. Who are trying to get the message through to him, which is a fruitless effort, that he cannot deal with the neo-fascist right in this country. And of course, the whole thing, you may be right. The whole thing may be a complete scam, a complete joke, a complete smoke and mirrors. The Republicans' attitudes towards Obama may be part of the scam so that Obama can continue to do what he's doing and have them as cover. Hey, Blue, I got to leave it there. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. And let me gratefully mention again that this hour is sponsored by Ray Merritt, who writes, "Thanks for bringing more truth and humor to the conversations we're privy to in our evolutionary quest." Ray Merritt, sponsoring this hour. Thanks, Ray. John is calling from Johnson City, Tennessee. Hello, John.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
I like Blue's comments. The only way you're going to reach Obama is maybe through a seance. the worst thing he ever did, being a Southern man, he whipped him. He whipped the Republicans and badly. And then he turned around and asked permission. Why?
Yeah, that's a good point.
The thing is, what I called about is we're probably not going to win the majority in any more elections. I live in an area that's very close to Virginia. And the newspapers are corporate owned.
Mm-hmm.
The local TV, all the radio.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, a senator over in Virginia. Well, a congressman. He was just defeated. He was a blue dog, but they had tremendous pressure on him for years.
Right.
They owned all the news outlets. This last election, they spent $350,000 on bogus campaign ads.
Mm-hmm.
The corporations sent the money in. There will probably never be, under this system, another Democrat there ever. There will not be one here. They're the senators that we will hire.
Mm-hmm.
They will not be Democratic either. It's closed off. The liberals have absolutely no economic presence. You understand? That part's over. And unless we do something, have a mechanism through which to regain economic presence, we have nothing. It doesn't matter what the Republicans do, no matter how outrageous, the Republicans could rape a bus full of nuns. And the local papers and radio here would say, why did Obama let that happen?
Yeah.
We're joking, but that's exactly what they do.
No, I don't think you are joking, because we have instance after instance of that. I do not get Obama. I have to reduce it to a race-based conversation in order to understand his reluctance to tell these senators and these House members to go to hell. That he, you know, this latest thing where you remember after he got what he called the shellacking, and he invited, he said, well, let's wait until everything calms down, then yeah, let's all get together and have dinner over here at the White House. And they, all the Republicans told him to go straight to hell. And they did it in such a nasty, demeaning way. They just said, we're busy. I mean, we're busy.
He just keeps showing up. Please be my friend.
Why?
I think he has a professor type mentality.
Or is it the
civil?
Yeah, I was going to say, John, you're in the South just like I am, and you know just like I know that there is an attitude down here that has been here since forever. And I realize Obama is not, he's not a Southern black. He doesn't have a great-great-grandparent who was an American slave, nothing like that. But there's an attitude that I think white America forces black America, especially black men, the ones that are not locked up, the ones that are educated, there's a forced attitude onto black men that in order to get along, you've got to somehow win over the white men who have the power to hang you from the nearest tree.
But even if he were white, at the moment he started the bipartisan junk, let's reach across the aisle, he lost. These people only understand fear and intimidation. If he said, okay, if you want your projects, you're going to come to me.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to come through me to get what you want. He lost it day one. As soon as they heard that, they didn't care. That's their attitude. The bigger problems, though, the labor. I'm pretty sure I know how they're going to finally destroy the last of the remaining so-called decent jobs.
How's that? All right, tell us.
Well, I study finance. I'm not going to get a job. I study it.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I thought, well, what if I were one of these corporations and I could finally get that H-1B visa with no limit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would buy up apartment buildings in major and lesser cities. Then I'd start bringing over all the foreigners I could,
mm-hmm,
declare them skilled. Oh, let's say an accountant. Well, we'll rent them out for $15 an hour. No benefits, no 401k, no insurance, no pension. And you could do that with cops, firefighters, teachers, nurses, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're going to do.
Now, for people who don't know, that visa you're talking about is the one that allows corporations to bring in, on a very expedited manner, so-called professionals, mm-hmm, who come in here and just take over American jobs anyway. Most of them do come, if I'm not mistaken, from India. A lot of them, mm-hmm, come from South Korea, from Taiwan, from the Philippines, and it's a trick by corporate America. They're not going to pay these guys $150,000 a year, which a qualified engineer or research person would make in this country. They're going to pay them. They're going to pay them a third of that. And
you know, go on.
No, go ahead.
You know
what
else? They just simply take guys about my age that are 45 and put them in a room and say, look, you're all fired.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your little severance package. And the next day they're replaced by somebody, because then the corporation says, we just don't have anybody who can do that job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they have to say to get the H-1B visa?
H-1B, I believe, is what it is.
Yeah.
Now, the second phase is to work on the states, if they can bankrupt the states one by one, what they can do is eventually default on pensions. Mm-hmm. You know, the pension will start paying a very low amount. They will no longer be able to guarantee career jobs.
You're talking
like
about the
firefighters.
You're talking about the public worker pensions, like school teachers, firefighters,
sure.
Policemen. Yeah, okay.
Sure. You know, get the coffers of the state so low that they can no longer put back into the pension. Destroy that. You know that's coming.
Yeah. You tell me a state in the union. I'm sure there are several, but you'd have to dig around to find them that are not in. You know, here in Georgia, we are so far in the red, and most states are so far in the red, and they've had Republican leadership here for 8 years now, and nobody seems to get it. That I don't know, John. Listen,
well, I tell you what. Look, hold on.
All right.
One last thing.
Okay.
I can't email, but if you do want to know about what I think is a solution, an economic solution,
mm-hmm.
I'll be happy to call you or write you. We have tens of millions of people on our side, but they have no direction whatsoever.
That's true.
It's worth a shot.
I'll tell you what, at my website, it has an address where you can... where you can write, and I'd love to hear more. Listen, John, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Chris is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Mike. Let me get off speaker.
Yeah, okay.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Chris.
Good to talk to you again. I'm not sure I agree with Blue. My naivety was, you know, kind of... was surgically removed years ago.
Mm.
But there are tiny little hints of something maybe changing. Rachel just covered this business of the vote on the unemployment insurance.
Right.
And forced the Democrat or the Republicans to vote against it. They had to do it in public. And apparently they're getting ready to do the same with the treaty that, not signing that treaty is
right.
Totally insane. So I'm not sure I agree with Blue. I think that, I mean,
Chris, hold on a second. Let me do a break here. We'll come back and chat a little bit more. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listen to the radio.
This hour is sponsored by Ray Merritt, who flatters us by writing, "Thanks for bringing more truth and humor to the conversations we're privy to in our evolutionary quest." Ray Merritt, sponsor this hour. Also, I want to mention our contributors. Haven't mentioned for a while. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Economic Affairs, of course, is Bruce Enberg, a.k.a. Prairie 2. Education Affairs Correspondent is Kay Petrini. Program's Ethics Advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. And the program's engineer and executive producer is Kathy Bay. All right, Chris, go ahead.
I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think I just mentioned the vote on the arms treaty.
Right.
That, you know, is insanity. I mean, you gotta wonder, do these people not have children? You know, I mean, do any of them? They're so tied up in their ideological wars. It's just, it mystifies me. That's all. I mean, it angers me, but it mystifies me. But I really, you know, like I said, I think there might be some tiny little, you know, glimmer of hope in what, you know, Obama and the administration is doing and well, more of the Congress, I guess.
Where do you see a glimmer of hope?
Well, this business of forcing them to stand up and say, no, we're not for unemployment. That's new. They haven't forced them to stand up and be counted, so to speak. And if they do it with the, you know, hopefully if they do it with the arms treaty and, you know, a couple other things that need to get done. And I understand that the history says this probably won't happen. But I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's a bad man. I don't think he's the tool of the right. I think he's more... His problem probably stems from being a community organizer, and his professional life prior to being a senator or a state senator was community organizer, and the whole method of doing that is to get together. And I don't think he's been able to shed that totally. And he totally needs to shed it. Because it ain't working with the Republicans. They're just not interested.
Well, I think you're right. And, Chris, I got to move on. I think you're probably right on that. But so much of what Obama does vis-a-vis the eight-year reign of criminality in this country and the way it was exported around the globe by Bush and the dead man walking Dick Cheney, Obama's reluctance to label that what it is that to me that overrides everything. The Bush Cheney crime syndicate were instrumental in an attack on this country on September 11, 2001, in perfect fulfillment of what the Project for New American Century said was needed in order to twist the American public into a collection of whining, shivering, terrified population. It's right out of the Goebbels playbook. And for Obama, you know, every time these Republicans get into office, it was Reagan, and then it was Pappy Bush, and then Junior Bush, crime syndicate after crime syndicate, murder and mayhem on a global scale repeatedly. Lawrence Walsh, special prosecutor for the crimes committed during Reagan and Bush 1 regarding Central America, was ready to, either he or his successor, to pursue these crimes against humanity, and Clinton would have none of that and brought all of it to an end. George W. Bush and Dick Cheney arguably have created a persona of the United States for the rest of the world that is criminal, vile, disgusting, can't be trusted, collapsing, dying, dead empire. And Obama refuses to do anything about that, and as a matter of fact, perpetuates, as Blue pointed out, as you know, as I know, perpetuates some of the worst violations of human rights put in place by Bush and Cheney. So, as far as Barack Obama trying to find compromise, you know, the first question is why? How do you compromise with cockroaches? How do you do that? How do you compromise with neo-fascists? How do you compromise with people who don't even own their own tongues anymore, much less their souls? How do you do that? And Barack Obama continues to throw everything in the gutter, and every time he does this, and every time the Republicans give him the middle finger, more respect, gone. You know, we make a big deal about mocking the Asian idea of loss of face. It's because we don't have an equivalent expression in this country. Loss of face doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but it's exactly what has happened to Obama. Every single time he's reached out to the cockroaches, they've just skittered off into the darkness and turned around and gave him the middle finger. And he continues. Well, I said it a couple of several weeks ago. He ought to just say to these people, guess what? I'm going to be a one-term president by my choosing. And now I'm going to kick ass and take names for the next 2 years. I don't think that's going to happen, though, do you? I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Other people.